Hello and welcome to Android Developers Backstage. I'm Chet Haas from the DevRel team.
I'm Tor Norby from the Android Studio team.
And we have so many people in the room.
So what happens when you have a podcast in the office? You just pick people up as you're walking.
That was your
hallways.
Cue to introduce yourself.
Yeah. I know, I just did. Oh, okay. Sorry. No,
I have to start this whole thing over again. This is like the 17th time. You know what? We're not going to do it again.
No. All right, we're just going to go. We'll edit. We'll fix it in post. I think we can do an AI to like make it sound like a... System UI team. Chet said I could be here to look good, which, given this is an audio-only podcast, sounds about right.
I'm Adam Cohen, an engineer on the System UI team.
I'm Chris Baines and DevRel. I think this is now my fourth time on this podcast.
Fourth?
Ooh. Fourth.
Do we have robes? Jackets?
I was thinking we just had a competition. Like, you tie, don't you? Is this your fourth or maybe third?
I don't know. How many of them have been stricken from the record?
All.
Oh, okay. So I'm first up. This is my first time.
All right. And?
I'm Alan Wong. I'm a product manager on Android.
Long-time listener, first-time talker.
Let's get one thing, right out of the way. We know the audio quality on this one is not going to be great. Normally, we sit in the studio with professional audio engineers doing all the hard work for us. This time, we had these great guests in town. We thought this is a perfect chance to have a good conversation, but we're doing it in the conference room. The audio is probably going to be bad. Please don't email us and complain.
We are optimizing for content, not quality, which is the same thing that could be said about, I don't know, platforms.
Are we going to mention the sock?
APIs?
The microphone is sitting on a sock.
Yeah, we have totally professional equipment that is buffering.
Dampening.
That's right. Oh, yeah, there's a good term. All right. So why are we... So Chris is in town, for example, for the week, because ADS is happening this week. Android Dev Summit, thank you. And Chris has been publishing a bunch of articles on GestureNav, which is one of the larger service areas that developers have to deal with in the Android 10 release. So we thought, as long as Chris is in town, who else would like to talk about this? Go. All right, GestureNav. Give some overview. Alan, do you want to give us an overview of what the feature is and maybe why we made this change?
Yeah, sure. So GestureNav, GestureNav, the change we made this year after in P, we introduced sort of the two-button navigation. This year, we introduced the fully gestural navigation. It might look familiar to some folks. You've seen it on a few different types of devices. We've kind of come out with our own flavor of it. And really, there are a couple goals. One is really getting the Android ecosystem all together on a single gesture navigation, hopefully making developers' lives easier. The second is really taking advantage of screens that now go edge to edge and ensuring that your content can go all the way from top to bottom is something users really care about. And all sort of the more modern premium phones are moving in that direction. And third, moving cheese.
Yes, just to make sure that people are paying attention. Okay, so you mentioned that we did something very similar to this in P. Why did we keep going? Like, what was it we were not done with?
Moving the cheese.
It's very heavy cheese. Have you ever seen those wheels of cheese before they cut it up? It's ridiculous.
Mostly the edge-to-edge bit. So we found buttons are a good thing, and that's why we kind of went with that intermediate model. But it really wasn't doing the trick on the edge-to-edge thing, which is the trend that OEMs are going in terms of the premium devices.
Actually, for buttons, it seems like we've been moving, especially earlier in the Honeycomb release, we started moving in the direction of trying to eliminate as many buttons as possible, right? So we kind of put that on hold for a while, and then we kind of came back to that theme, right? Just like less noise on the screen must be better, as long as the users can figure out what's going on, right? So there's the discoverability versus the UI noise. Mm-hmm.
Well, actually, it's been, monotonically, increasing since then, right? Like, we started that on Honeycomb, and then immediately after that, Ice Cream Sandwich on the Galaxy Nexus had software navigation. Like, we just did not have physical buttons on that, except for power and volume, which we retain today because some things need to be able to do without looking at the device.
Yeah. We've been pretty conservative. We've actually stuck with our sort of three-button model for a really long time, largely because it works. It's buttons are usable. You can see them. You know where they are. You know how they work. And actually, that's kind of why we've also kind of leaned into having that as a fallback, the three-button mode. There's many users for whom that's maybe a better solution. And so now we kind of have leaned into that choice, and we're kind of pushing forward with that classic model as well as the GestureNav model. So hopefully, the whole ecosystem, that will be a consistent set of options.
That choice, you mean having it in settings that they can opt out or opt opt-in depending on when they got upgraded.
Yeah, increasingly we'll think of it as opt-in, right? Because you get a new device, you know, post-queue, chances are it's going to be start out in gestural mode.
Yeah, okay. Alan can correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe that the button is not optional, so you always have to have the button option, but the gesture nav one is optional, sort of depending on the device. So
yeah, the button mode needs to always be there for accessibility options. Like if a user isn't, say, mobile with their fingers or whatever, having that option there is much easier for things like TalkBack to actually use, whereas like TalkBack can't really trigger a gesture message. So to have those buttons on screen means TalkBack can actually trigger them, and therefore signal navigation actually works.
Okay. And what's the... So I know what the default options are on the Pixel devices that are shipping out there. Is that the standard that the ecosystem is being told to offer as well? Like, if you got upgraded, thou shalt do the following?
So we don't actually change it on upgrade. And in fact, we strongly recommend to partners that, like, don't change or don't actually try not to move the cheese on users on upgrade. But for new phones, we'll start seeing that as the default mode for... I think mainly more premium devices, ones where the screen actually is going more edge-to-edge, like where the screen, the physical screen is, you know, sort of touching on either side, where the bezels are much smaller. And it will be the default for handfuls of partners, and then other partners will default to three button.
Okay. And
that's kind of it, too. Like, they're, like,
what do you mean?
You know, so I think a lot of our partners had actually been trying out different types of gesture navigation, like different forms, etc., which kind of led to confusing both user experience and developer experience. And so I think that's a thing we've sort of worked with partners to try and avoid going forward.
Yeah, I guess if you view it myopically from the point of view of, you know, like I've always had Nexus and Pixel devices, and this is a radical change, you're sort of missing the larger ecosystem that we were actually trying to fix, which was there were a bunch of partner devices coming out with this kind of thing, but an inconsistent version of it. Well, inconsistent across the ecosystem.
And already out. They've been shipping the devices for, you know, a couple of years or so.
And so what we're trying to do is actually collect everybody on a single experience as opposed to multiple things.
Which makes it much easier for developers to actually update their apps. If they've got consistent experience to kind of target and work towards, it's much easier to test against. Whereas you've got to test against each individual partner device,
So today with these two models, do I still need to test with both, or is it enough to just test on one and assume that it's going to be fine in the three button mode?
I mean, I'm sure we'll talk more about developer stuff in a while, but yeah, you really do need to test for both modes, really. Just do the differences that happen on device, how your app integrates with the system UI. Should we talk more about that now?
Let's do it.
So for apps to update for gesture nav, what we call navigation ready, because it's not just about gesture navigation, it's to actually make your app work with all the navigation modes on the phone. So for Pixel devices, that's going to be gesture navigation and the button nav. And so what we really want apps to do are three things. I'm trying to think of them off the top of my head. But it's to coin a term that we've been using in all of our talks, what we call go edge to edge. So that's to allow your app to be laid out from the very top of the screen to the very bottom of the screen. And so your app is kind of that big, immersive, seamless sheet behind the whole screen.
We used to call that full screen, did we not?
Well, even when your app is edge to edge, the status bar is still visible, so you can still see your notification icons, the clock, you know, all that, the system icons, all that stuff.
Okay.
But also at the bottom, you can see the navigation bar.
Okay.
So edge to edge means on the left and right edge, not the top and bottom.
And the top and bottom. It means the top and bottom above, behind all the system Chrome, so that it you know, whether the system is drawing buttons or it's just drawing an indicator of gestures, like, doesn't matter. The app is already using every one of those pixels in the best way it can.
Just don't put buttons there.
Yeah, and that's part of the things that developers have to do is that. So let's go back. So going edge to edge, what you really want to do is for apps to, as I said, start drawing behind the status bar and navigation bar. Now what happens is the difference between gesture nav and button mode is that obviously the height of those bars are different. So in button mode, the height of the navigation bar is 48 dips as an implementation detail. In gesture navigation mode, it's smaller, 24 dips or something similar. And so apps can't hard code these values in. They've got to use an API, the infamous API that we've had for many years called the Window Insets API. And so apps are now kind of going to have to be forced to start using this API and actually try and work out where the safe areas that they can draw and lay out their views in.
Can can you still use the cheap fit system windows in your layout and just not pay attention to it, or does that no longer really give you what you expect?
You can. The trouble with fit system windows is in the attribute itself. But there's two problems. The first one is that the default thing you get from the view class is that it will always pad your view's content in by whatever the insets are, which kind of defeats the object of going edge to edge, because all you get is this white space.
You're letterboxing yourself.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Imagine like maps, for example, where you don't want to put like a navigate button under the nav bar, but you want the kind of the roads to continue. You want all the kind of textures to kind of continue right through to the bottom of the physical display.
And the bars might seem like they're small. I mean, we're talking about 24 divs at the top, 40-ish divs at the bottom. But that actually makes a big difference when you're using the device. Because it kind of feels like you get that immersive device, especially as devices tend to be going more towards bezel-less displays. Like, it feels like it just goes to the edge of the actual device rather than it's black bar.
So can I do this with just XML layouts, or do I have to start messing with actual code and calling get window insets and do arithmetic on it?
Yeah, so the problem with the window insets API is that you're kind of forced to now use code. We've been working on some ways that we can get around that and try and move it more towards layouts, but it's still early days.
But I mean, what if you collaborated with the constraint layouts team and you had special constraints saying, I want to attach to this to below whatever the min-max is?
Yes, exactly what we're planning.
Okay. All right, you heard it here first. Another ADS, not ADS,
you're not
ADB
just
exclusive.
You're up to Tor from the tools team.
That works too, that's fine.
Is that
yeah.
commitment?
Yes, so we're going to have, well, hopefully, I've got some kind of experimental code where it's a subclass of constraint layout, and it kind of shoehorns it in as like an after effect. And that works. And we just got some new attributes like layout, margin, system window insets bottom. So they're quite long, but you can kind of define a much more granular way to apply insets, but at a layout level. So it becomes much more easier. And the kind of functionality is where you want your layouts to be, which is your XML. You don't want to be random activities or fragments. You want them to be together where you lay out your views. So yeah.
And we would hope that apps that are really optimizing for a really edge-to-edge, very, very immersive sort of experience are already, they're probably already in code territory anyway, because they're dealing with cutouts. Right? We've had just display cutout APIs for a couple of years now. And if you don't want letterboxing, you're working with those too. So it's another way for you as the app to sort of at runtime figure out, okay, what are all the contours of this device that I can flow into?
So you had said three. I think that was one.
I think we kind of merged into two and three there. What's the next one? And so we got going edge to edge. So that's kind of drawing behind the screen. The second one is because we now have gestures, the system UI is trying to kind of overlay on top.
I've
so
made gestures at my phone for many years, but that's probably not the gesture.
Well, with Soli. Sorry.
So you can now swipe. You can swipe in from the vertical edge, from either the left or right edge, and that will take the user back. So we're replacing the back button. And you can swipe from the bottom of the display, and that will allow the user to go to their recent apps or to actually go to the home screen. And so because we now have those gestures and they kind of overlay your app, if your app also has gestures in the same kind of gesture space, so I don't know, there's vertical swipes near the edges or the bottom, they can conflict. And so the system pretty much nearly always wins from the kind of default position. And so there's some special care you have to place if you have like a really important gesture, which is somewhere near the edges.
For example, drawer layout, right? Like some of the things that we provide are automatically in conflict with this, right?
Yes, drawer layouts.
Okay, so how does that work now?
It doesn't.
In the sense that developers need to move to a new pattern, or in the sense that we broke it and we're fixing it?
I mean, to say it doesn't work is sort of doesn't work. The gesture part of it doesn't work, but there's still a button, and actually that is the more common way that a user will access that drawer.
Just because it's hidden UI over there and they don't really know
what's going on. Yeah, it's kind of invisible swipes are a little bit, which is why we've left the three button mode, for example. Yeah. Invisible swipes are not the most intuitive, and we actually saw that with the drawer layout.
Okay.
So we didn't totally break the drawer layout, but it does, you know, it does make us think a little bit more about where we're going with that in the future.
We made it clear that, that yeah, the edges increasingly belong to the system. And if you have UI in your app that you want the user to interact with and understand, you need an affordance for it.
I don't know if that maybe is a good segue into what we're sort of suggesting in the. I don't know if you're up to back exclusion yet.
We haven't got that yet.
Okay. Well, let's not skip ahead.
We'll
get back to that. Yeah.
I think we're on number two.
Well, it's kind of the same thing. So for apps, so forgetting draw layout for a minute. So if
forever.
Sidestep that. Well,
close that.
Okay, going back to navigation draw. Navigation draw is a pattern which kind of emerged on Android. Outside of the Android team. So it was a pattern which apps were implementing before kind of it got ratified, but kind of took on with the material team. And so the material team kind of saw that apps were using this pattern in various ways. It got put into a guideline, and then an implementation came out to draw it. And so what happened is, unfortunately, it started to turn into like the dumping ground of navigation. There are probably other ways that apps can add navigation to their apps without using the draw layout. We're not going to tell you what to use because it depends on the content in your app. How many top-level navigation items do you have? If it's four or less, you can probably move to a bottom navigation. There's look at the material site. It's got lots of guidance on navigation in general about what you should move to.
That's a good point about it having become sort of the junk drawer of navigation. That, but you can use it because you know a lot of the things that end up there probably belong on an overflow somewhere too, right? If they don't belong on screen, like settings or you know feedback or what have you, that belongs somewhere else. So a user right now, look, given a hamburger on the left, overflow on the right, like you just have to try it all to try and find where those functions might be. So reducing mystery meat UI is always a good thing.
I was looking at this. I've been using various streaming apps recently, and there's one where depending on what part of the nesting hierarchy you went into, either there's going to be a back arrow on the upper left or there's going to be an X over there on the upper right.
Mm.
Or sometimes you just need to like go non-full screen and then go back from the normal back. It's like, where is the thing that I need?
And then we end up with those air gestures you were talking about.
Exactly.
Or you can just swipe from, you know, pretty much anywhere on the left or right now. And that's kind of part of why we kept that. So, you know, sacred in a sense, like, you know, if we're going to have a back gesture, it has to be very reliable.
Right.
And that did lead to some extra constraints for applications, but we kind of thought it was the right trade-off because back we've seen is a really core thing for users. People use it, I don't know what the number is, over 100 times a day or something. And so, you know, it's nice to just be able to do it. You know, one-handed mode, you can do it from the right side at the bottom. Or
I didn't know that for the longest time until someone pointed it out to me, and now I love it. I just wish that was, you know, made more
right.
Yeah.
Known
there. I mean,
somewhere.
People have to, there's some,
yeah.
some education.
Yeah, admittedly, we could do a better job on the education. I think that's something we're still
if
thinking about.
If only there were a
yep.
team whose responsibility was to educate developers.
Or users.
Users.
Because yeah.
Oh, yeah,
it really is life-changing to realize you could just go back no matter how you're holding the phone. I find now that going back, I'm still carrying an Xperia phone that has P on it, so I can see how P looks and how P looks and how, you know, master is broken. It's a tiny phone, so you'd think I'd be able to reach to either side of it, but I have to crane to find the back button on it. And it's going back to a back button from edge swipe back, it's hard. It's really difficult.
All I've asked was just to say, you mentioned we're sort of on this journey where we made some changes in P, we made some changes in Q. We're still not done. I don't think our changes are going to be nearly as dramatic in coming years. And I think we have a very, very strong desire not to rethink the model in any way. But, you know, education, carousels, we know, are sort of an ongoing problem. There's just a lot of stuff we want to do to continue improving this.
But this is the shape of things, you know. Right, we're going to be doing fine tuning. We're going to continue to make it better. We're going to continue to, as you said, educate users and developers. But we're not moving the cheese to like another side of the screen. This is where it's going to be. This is navigation on Android now.
I will quote you on that, and I will repeat that to you in 5 years.
Okay.
All right.
Yeah.
5 years. God, that's an unimaginably long time from now.
Is this where we get to sort of sit and complain?
Well, actually, no. Before we tell us about something.
I think we have a number three, right?
I have a hard question. Am I allowed to ask what's going on with third-party launchers?
Yeah, of course you can ask that.
All right.
They still work. So,
because I believe there was pain early on, right?
Yeah, and so that was really just we are racing to get this thing done.
Yeah.
And there's a whole bunch of edge cases around third-party launchers.
Edge cases, I like
edge
it.
Cases, mm. yes. Mm. We sort of had a lot of bugs. So this is working now. It'll be coming to like previous Pixel devices in an upcoming release. And, you know, out of the box on Pixel 4, third-party launchers work. I think there's different versions of work, right? There's like, can a third-party launcher do what the system launcher is doing?
Yeah.
And the answer to that is no. That's just, we just can't do that. The APIs required are really deep. You know, you'd have to access a lot of privacy considerations, like access to all the screenshots that are on there. But even just if you look at what we've done over the past few years in terms of where these boundaries lie, in terms of how the combination of the recent task switching and the launcher interface, both with each other and with the system, that's not a stable public API. So it's both like from a security standpoint and also from an API stability standpoint, that's just not really an option. But, you know, you can do most of the things so that we have a good mode now for third-party launchers. You can do the swipe up. You can do the swipe up and hold. All the back stuff works. It's just that you don't get quite as rich of an integration between the launcher and the overview mode. And that's because it's, you know, siloed processes, siloed APKs.
And we'll continue to figure out if there are ways that we can make that integration better. To be clear, like, we're committed to the idea that you can change the way that your workspace works, right? The idea of a third-party launcher that, you know, you want to have, maybe you want, you know, different icons, or you want giant icons, or you want no icons because you like seeing the picture of your dog or whatever. Like, we're committed to that, but third-party control of system navigation is not something we can support. So we've got to draw the line somewhere.
Yep.
So was there the problems that I was remembering the third-party launchers had, was that in the P release or was that sort of early Q as we were messing around?
Mostly Q. So the Q betas, it was like, hey, there's a lot of bugs here. What's going on? And it was like, yeah, we know. We're trying.
Okay.
And so eventually we weren't really able to get there for Q. So right now you can still install a third-party launcher on Q out of box, but it'll default you back to the three-button mode. So that's just an incompatibility between the full gesture navigation mode and a third-party launcher. And again, it said we're committed to, and it's already really, the work's done to fixing that incompatibility. Yeah.
Okay.
Went out on Pixel 4, or will go out with Pixel 4.
And really, it was just a matter of a whole bunch of bugs. It was like, this is not an acceptable experience. We said gesture nav is an opt-in experience on the devices that we were shipping to up the Q2. Third-party launchers is an opt-in experience. There's no reason to ship something so broken. Let's just give it bake it fully and get it out.
Okay. That was my question. Now you can start complaining.
No,
do you have a number three?
Hang on. We haven't hit my third.
Yeah, yeah.
All right.
Trying to cut me off, Chet. The third one is about, so we spoke just about about 5 minutes ago, we spoke about gestures and the way apps can actually interact.
I'm going to let you finish.
And so, The way apps can actually interact with the system UI is that we've got a new API now called Gesture Execution Rex.
Uh-huh.
And so apps can now, or UIs, can now set parts of the screen where the system gestures shouldn't override what the app is doing. So if the app has a specific, I don't know, view or gesture somewhere, where they know that that's a key use case of their UI, and it's more important than the system gesture, they can tell the system where not to kind of come in or not. In beta 3, IO, and 4, the system, or the app can actually exclude all the edge. And then internally, an app kind of misused that API. And then there was a point where lots of people were getting very angry because basically they couldn't ever leave the app or go home. And so we now have limits on that, which Adam can speak about.
So like the nav drawer library could say, I care about the left edge, and I'm not going to let the gesture system take over the left edge.
Yeah, I mean, that was the initial implementation. So we had a version of draw layout out at IO, which used this API. And it kind of works. It's a little bit weird.
Could this be like, you know, when you go on Do Not Disturb, if you keep calling a phone number, it'll finally go through. Could you, like, if you keep swiping, it'll finally, like, let the system have it?
Well, that was kind of
it's like you get stuck in VI, you know, you keep typing keystrokes to get out of it.
No, actually, no, I'm still stuck in VI.
Okay,
right. I got stuck in it in 2000 and I haven't gotten out of it yet. No, the initial, like, I think we were thinking with the gesture drawer version that you'd swipe in, there's the drawer, and you swipe in again, and then you actually get back because now the drawer no longer needs to go in. But what had happened in practice is that back when interpreted by a drawer is close the drawer, and so you would just be in like a loop of opening and closing the drawer over and over again, like opening the refrigerator looking for something you don't know what it is. And it was just, yeah.
We created infinite loops for users, not just developers.
That's right. So but this goes back to, I mean, you said that you mentioned we had apps internally that were, using it and using it wrong, and we discovered only in like living with it just how broken that was.
So what did you do? Like, what is it limited to now? This API?
So apps can now only request, well, they can request what they want, but the system will only honor up to 200 dips per edge at a time.
This is from the bottom up?
From the bottom up.
Yeah.
It has to be pinned at the bottom?
No, it's if you ask for 217, you get the first 200 starting from the bottom.
That's right. Okay.
Yeah.
And I think that is hard-coded in this release, but that is not a hard-coded policy, right?
We hope not to change it unless we find out that it's super problematic. I mean, just to like step back a little bit, you know, so we're kind of dogfooding these devices, and basically you have this super core gesture, and it's like, okay, 70% of the time it just works, and then, oh, now it doesn't. And basically that's just such an erosion of kind of user trust and how stable system UI ought to be that we really just decided we got to lock this down. And we think it's definitely the right choice. At least we think it's the right place to start. I mean, never say never, we might change that. The other kind of guideline that I think is important, and I think this goes to just general usability, is basically we're trying to tell developers, hey, if you're going to override something that, you know, for that left or right edge swipe, make it visible, you know, make a visible affordance of what that's going to be so that the user kind of understands why the application is stealing that gesture.
And knows where that gesture might actually work, right? Like, you've got it.
Exactly.
If you have an area of the screen that's not the entire edge where you can, like, pull in, like, your chat for your streaming app or whatever, put a tap there.
Yeah. And can you tell if the system hasn't honored your request? Can you tell what it honored so you could make sure that your affordance isn't lying to you?
Not on aware of, correct.
Okay.
Yeah.
We don't currently have that.
That'd be useful.
So, I mean, a good example of where this would be a really, you know, a good API to use is, let's say you're cropping a photo and, you know, you've got your crop frames and they go right to the edge, you know, and that's a great example where it's like the user's going to grab that and they're going to move it. It's not going to be surprising that they didn't go back. It's because they're sliding an object that's moving on the screen. And it's like, of course, that's the object I'm trying to move.
Right. But it'd be surprising if they tried it and actually GestureNap took over. So you showed them an affordance set. Isn't being honored, right? So it seems really important to be able to tell.
That's right. Well, we want that to be an exceptional situation, right? Where the app says, there's a really obvious thing that needs to happen, and you can see it, and you can see that it's near the edge of the screen, and so we're going to give you that interaction.
But our platform is getting much more intelligent about photos, so couldn't we just say that we were just making a decision that your photo sucked and we were taking you back?
Go back, try again.
Too. Yeah. That's like, right. Terrible photo. Just get out of here.
Yeah, so I mean, the 200 dips is like, it's a bit of a soft contract right now, but to talk about where that came from, that's, you know, corresponds to about the size of four touch targets.
Just to be clear, so 200 dips, like, that's dip squared, right? We're talking about area, right?
No.
Or are we talking
linear? The distance along the edge. 200 dips of
how far in?
Edge.
Like, it just seems.
Well, it's to the width of the gesture zone. The gesture zone actually on Pixel is that it's configurable, so the user can choose what their sensitivity is. Which
the developer can read that. That's
I see.
Part of the
and what is that typically, like 8, 16, 30?
Defaults to 20 or 22.
20, okay.
Yeah, 20.
So it's like a 20 by 200 is basically the area that you're allowed to steal.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean,
the app is allowed to
unsteal. Yeah.
And there are APIs to know how large these sizes are? Or?
The window insets API.
Yeah, okay.
So we have new insets now. So previously we only had what we call the system window insets, and they tell you where the system UI is being displayed over your app. We now have new insets, one called system gesture insets, which tells you where the system gestures are, so those areas that Eric just spoke about. We also have a new one called mandatory system gesture insets. Great name. But that tells you, we have a different, there's two types of gestures. We have mandatory gestures and non-mandatory. Mandatory are ones where the app cannot use the exclusion API. They are mandatory. So
this would be like the bottom of the screen.
Yeah, exactly. So currently on Pixel 4 and in Android 10, that mandatory gesture zone is at the bottom of the screen where the home gesture is. And that's because the user should always be able to go exit your app. It's an escape hatch. So yeah, they're the two new insert types.
So are you done now? Am I allowed to interrupt?
Is the shape is it a square shape or can it be something more complicated?
The insert is a square shape. So
okay.
Yep. Gestures.
All right.
What shape do you want? Like a
bronze or a pterodactyl?
Well, I feel like in a different rev of the gesture thing, there was like a corner thing that only applied in a corner. So I just wasn't sure if gestures could be doing things not just along a whole edge, but maybe just in the middle. But there could be one over in the bottom right corner, one in the middle of the right hand side. And if I could get like a shape that had these cutouts for where am I making any sense? No, I see a bunch of blank.
Assistant gesture. So we now have the bottom gesture nav.
It just seemed to me the system may not always take over all edges, right? It could be stealing, you know, rounded corners, for example, right? Bottom right corner, we can take that one, right? For, you know, quickly switching to the previous app. Something like that.
Insets are currently rectangular.
Okay.
Cool. Rectangles are easy.
Curves yeah, that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. All right. So, feature requests.
No complaints.
Potato. Yeah. When I switched, I feel like switching to the previous app was really painful. It's like I have to hold for like a half a second until I get in this other mode. And I recently discovered by accident that actually I can quickly switch. There's like a little line on the bottom. If you touch that, you can do it more quickly. But I don't think that was explained. But I'm still wondering why we're doing that long press thing.
The long drag.
The long drag, and then I'm in this
drag
mode.
And slight hold.
Yeah.
I don't find it that slow, but fair enough. I think some people find it a little slower than... It is slower than what we had before, which was either quick swipe up.
Yeah, right? I like that one. I like when I sort of swiped up and I was in this mode where I could quickly cycle through the apps, and I kind of liked it.
Yeah, I think the real reason is in gesture, when you're doing gestures, you kind of realize there is sort of a hierarchy of gestures, right? A quick swipe is kind of the best gesture. It's super easy, super coarse, super sloppy, and it just works.
It's kind of satisfying. I mean, that's why I think back in whenever we introduced it, it was meant for like deleting email and things like, you know, notifications, right? It feels great.
Yeah. And so I think what we've done is we sort of tried to assign that, you know, cream of the crop gesture to what we think is the most important thing. So we've assigned the bottom one, just a coarse swipe goes home, from the left and right edge, it's back. Those are the two most frequent actions. And so overview, it's super important, but you just have to hold for, you know, a couple hundred extra milliseconds or 500.
And we can do more.
He's really busy.
I mean, you're in a hurry, but that's why we have the quick switch, right?
Well,
which is
since Dan is here, I remember, didn't you have like, I had to like, I would pull down twice, and actually we still do this for system settings, right?
Uh-huh.
What if I pulled up a second time after app drawer? Well, I guess we always want to go home.
Well, we really want to optimize for home you hit 80 times a day, right? Like that's the one that needs to work. That's the one that needs to be like absolutely bulletproof.
All right.
I was going to say instantly though on, so like lower down in the hierarchy, somewhat less core would be switching to the previous app.
Yeah.
And that's a quick one. And then further down would be getting your entire like task switching universe, right? And so incidentally, and of course, you know, podcast users can't see this, but if you've got a device running Q and you put your finger kind of at the bottom and swipe up diagonally at like a 30-degree angle or something, you'll get the previous app. But if you're like, oh, that's not the app I wanted to go to, immediately what happens next is that you've paused in thought, like, oh, that wasn't what I wanted, and that's exactly when overview kicks in. So we've tried to put things in the place where you might naturally encounter them as a result of going through literally.
Yeah, that was actually the one that someone showed me how to do, but I keep doing the wrong thing. Like suddenly I'm in the assistant.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah,
that one, and then you go up and.
Oh, so the trick is to not go.
So
over.
We're
you can just do this.
We're
going to
have a customer
out.
Support
yeah.
service call,
which is really what my motivation for this podcast is. You know,
that's right.
Calvin can just do this
all right.
every one of
so
our
the,
users.
Well, and,
so
but I think that is the challenge that is set before us now, is to develop a onboarding that is like having Adam Cohen himself, you know, helping with your phone.
And I mean, that's
the
trick. Like, I've been going too far into the corner. The trick is to not go all the way to the corner. Then it works.
Mm-hmm.
All right, cool.
Yeah, we also have the assistant gesture. So the
So the one that surprised me related to his was I was a big fan of the like popping back and forth between apps,
right?
Which I think came from some interaction at the bottom. Now I'm getting blurry on what I used to do, but I went to that
the double tap probably.
Double tap. Yep. And then I started using the bar, and now like that's like a quick access to recents. Like I don't have to go into recents or overview mode,
mm-hmm.
right? You just scroll through the apps.
Yeah, if you look at the histogram of like, you know, how far back people go in recents, it's like, you know, it falls off really quickly after the past two. Right?
I just want the official record to reflect that once I accidentally discovered this, my complaint about the slow thing went away because the new way is actually really fast. I just didn't. I don't think we described that in the setting. Like the setting tells you what to do, and it doesn't mention that.
I think that's the second time this has come up.
Okay, right.
You know, developer education is very well done. I think we could do more on our sort of user onboarding.
We tend to optimize on user onboarding for like getting you into the device as quickly as possible. Because if you get an exciting new software update, the first thing you want to do is play with it, not sit through an instructional video.
So
figuring out that balance
is a really hard problem.
Right, and the thing is, I did not come through there. So I was an upgrade from a previous, right? So I just didn't have this. I had to go into settings and find it. And there's actually like three lines of text explaining what it is. But it doesn't mention all the things, right? It doesn't mention the corner. It doesn't mention this.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And so, like, I feel like I would have loved, like, a learn more link there to really learn how to use it effectively.
I mean, so we talked about this last week with Rod and Glenn, where there is this weird situation where we have an amazingly complicated computer, and there is, A, no manual for it, and, B, even if we had a manual, nobody would read it.
And not a lot of surface area. That's the thing with smartphone interfaces, is that there's not a lot of pixels. There's not a lot of places to draw and explain.
Yeah, you can't pop up the help window in the upper right that you can refer to occasionally. I'm busy with it.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah, so how do you onboard people to, well, we just changed this feature. Good luck in our discovery. Yeah.
For
what it's worth, these are the kinds of things that we love working out, right? Like we create these problems for ourselves and then figure out how to solve them for the users and then, you know, do it over again.
Engineers create problems that they can engineer solutions to.
Like the user education is incredibly hard. And we've seen this over and over again.
Really
like,
early on. So you and I have been working on System UI together for almost 10 years.
10 years,
now.
Yeah.
And one of the first projects that I know that you took over was the launcher in tablet UI, and we had all those little, because there was a ton of new stuff we had to teach, and we had these little sort of contextual little bubbles that would show up. But even then, we had like miles of screen real estate compared to what we have on the phone.
Yep. And the thing I think you mentioned also about like blocking the user from just using the phone, it's like you show a bunch of pop-ups, little instructional things. It's like, shut up. I want to check my email. Like, I want to text my friend about like my awesome new phone and test my emojis and stuff.
Well, that's right. Then we get really trained to like find the skip button and make it go away, and we hit it, and then immediately think, oh, actually, maybe I wanted that piece of information that just went away forever.
I actually like the way we've done that in settings on the Pixel devices. We have sort of like tasks you can come back to, little, you know, optional side quests that you can pick up later. You go back in settings; they get listed at the top of that dashboard screen.
The game design thing is very interesting. I think that's where we're trying to learn from a little bit in terms of like, you know, you discover these new gestures. Hopefully there was some sense of satisfaction. This was not intentional, but like there's some sense of satisfaction that as you pick things up, you become more and more of an expert on using the phone, playing this game as it were.
More like relief than satisfaction, I would say. Like, oh, there is a way to do it quickly.
Still a positive feeling.
Yeah.
I'll take it.
This is true.
I got a question for Adam, it seemed that the quick switch, the way it worked changed from P to Q, as in the app order is different. Why?
That's what I was noticing, right? Like, I think that used to be it went back and forth, and now it just scrolls the entire list. Am I misremembering this?
That's right.
Since if an app has focus, it kind of pops back to the top. So, whereas previously it was quite a linear list, I believe. I think now if you go back, so if you quick switch to the previous app and it gets focus and you open it, keyboard or something, it will then pop to the top of the stack.
Only if you actually do something with
this
it.
This is a temporary state.
So there's a temporary state where going back, I'm sorry, Adam, you answer. This is your thing.
So like basically in P, what we had is as soon as you sort of release and you get the full screen version of the app, that now reflects, it's at the top of the queue. So that's the most recent app now. Everything else kind of shuffles behind that. And so what that kind of creates is, or actually creates, is if you just swipe once to the right and switch to the previous task, and that gets focused, and then you do that gesture immediately again, you'll actually go back to the task you were just done.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
What we have now is sort of, it's slightly more stable, but it's only temporarily stable. And so the idea is, as you go back and forth, so let's say you swipe over one and you just pause for a second. Actually, if you just reverse the gesture and go the other way, then you get back to the previous task. That's a sort of like a heuristic about how long it's, you know, we use whether you've interacted with the app or how long you've been kind of looking at it to decide whether we kind of commit that switch. And the idea is basically whether the user sort of has in their mental model that this has become your foreground app or not. And so if you're kind of mid switching, if you're not done the switching task, we try to keep it stable. But if you've kind of shifted into now I'm using this, we sort of now commit it and shift things back. This is really very hard to explain. I don't know if this is going to come through well on a podcast, but
it's like once we think you're done with the task of figuring out where you want to
exactly,
go,
yeah.
That pops to the top. But
yep.
If you know we think you haven't quite found what you're looking for,
we use spatial
goes,
stability, right? It's like
right.
The thing was just there, so it's still just there. So
uh-huh.
you know you swipe and then you reverse, and it should be there.
Or should we also say that we use machine learning here?
I don't know. Do you want to go?
Yeah.
we're machines, humans.
Yeah, we're learning what you're doing. Yeah,
we're learning. Yeah, the use case is, I guess, like if you have a doc that has like some code and you just want to swipe over and then swipe back to type it actually in. I think we debated this for.
I had very strong feelings about this. I think it's. I don't think there's one clear answer on it. I think there is some truth to the fact that once you've sort of done that task, your short-term memory is very short and fragile, and it's kind of like, you know, you quickly forget that other task was to the right, and you actually just get used to doing the same gesture to get back.
How much do we... Did you also debate just, like, eliminating tasks? Like, we don't need to let you transition between the 15 tasks that are still in memory because, honestly, you don't care about the 15.
Well, yeah, so the quick switch is definitely optimized for only going back, like, you know, 2, 3. You can keep going if you want to, but
right.
this is not the mode for you. If
I just
going
wondered,
back
like, did you
tasks.
Actually debate just, like, eliminating some of those? We'll, you know, only go back between the last 3.
We dropped that 30 minutes, I think. Right. Or something like that. We
I don't remember the
so
heuristic.
It's not in memory. It's actually like time of use.
How we had
a time. We've always had a heuristic for recents, like how many we keep. We'll age things out. It's a combination of, I'd have to go ask Winston what the exact heuristic is, but it's a combination of time and number. So there's a maximum number, but then there's also a maximum time. So whichever one comes first.
We want it to feel reliable. We don't want to expunge things too quickly because we want you to feel like, oh, no, this is a place where all of my activities... you know, live. Like, it actually knows what I've been up to for the last, you know, several hours. But yeah, most of the screenshots may correspond to apps that have actually been, you know, pushed out to
memory
or expunged from memory entirely.
Despite the fact, people still like doing the swipe away thing where they go into overview and they get rid of
clear
their
them
apps.
Off, yeah.
I think that's, well, I mean, we've always had these sort of fidgety bits of the UI. People pull down the notification shade and kind of just scrub it up and down, swiping things away in overview or swiping back and forth. There's just an inherent like tactile satisfaction to that, but there's also the emotional, like, you know, you thank that app for its service and you send it on its way.
Also feels like, you know, I put the bottle in the recycling can. I am saving the earth one bottle at a time. I'm swiping this out. Therefore, the whole situation on my device must be better, right?
Mm-hmm.
My wife has done this religiously from day one, and I cannot convince her that the system is going to take care of itself. Nope, when she's done with that app, it goes away. And the earth is better for it.
That's right.
Somehow. All right, so what did we forget to ask?
I don't think anything. I covered my three topics. I shall leave
eventually.
We talked about all our inks, which is, you know, that was really my goal today, was getting rid of some inks.
Feels better.
Much better. Oh, yeah.
But you asked early on, like, you know, we shipped some of this in P and then some more of it in Q, and you sort of, you asked, you know, what's up with that? And I think we talked about this in public fora before, but it bears mentioning that, like, we knew this was a multi-year project. We knew that we were developing something alongside other OEMs that were trying different experiments. And so we, to hold ourselves honest, to keep ourselves honest, we, you know, made something good enough to ship, and we shipped it in P, and we learned a lot from it. I don't think we would have a solution that we're in Q that we were near, would be nearly as happy with if we had been, like, if we had sent somebody to work on this in a bunker for 2 years. Like, that's not how you get UI good. You need feedback.
Even from, like, a kind of technical infrastructure standpoint, like, a lot of the major changes we made in P laid the groundwork for what we did in Q. Like, there's no way we would have been able to do in Q from a technical standpoint without that first step of P. I think the other thing that, you know, really just did become very crisp was the edge-to-edge thing. And, like, the OEM demand for that is very strong. And that was actually, to be honest, that wasn't as strong in P. So we were kind of looking at it with a little bit more of an open set of solution space. Not to say we thought we were, you know, like, had tons of time in P, but the sort of crystallization of, like, edge to edge, this is, like, where the industry is going, that was just, like, okay, that really kind of pointed us in the direction for Q.
And you mentioned the infrastructure that we laid, the groundwork that we laid in P. I mean, none of this would have been possible. I mean, we've got System UI and DevRel folks in the room, but none of this would have been possible without the window manager team, who really, like, just rebuilt the way windows are handled and what parts of the system are responsible for showing those bits of Chrome. I mean, System UI can control a lot more of sort of this window choreography now, which allowed us to iterate and do things that we could never do before.
Yep.
The team really built a ton of stuff that this is built upon.
Yeah, just synchronizing the ability to, like, you know, move a UI with move a window with UI in another process is sort of...
And crop those corners, those rounded corners,
I think actually your point about this being a multi-release feature, that's something that I'm seeing in the platform overall as we mature as platform developers, that we used to develop features that by definition had to be done and shipped for the next release.
Mm-hmm.
And that was about as far as our horizon timeline could be, right? We couldn't think, I mean, Master was unstable as it was. We certainly couldn't think about, like, submitting something that was going to be unstable for several releases. And so we would only develop features that you could hopefully finish in 6 months realistically, then you'd fix all the bugs in another 3 months and then it ships, right? Whereas now we really are thinking a little bit longer term, like, what are the larger things that we need to do for the platform? And the way you do that is by working on them incrementally, and maybe part of that feature goes in now and then the rest of the feature goes in future releases.
And paradoxically, that kind of thinking that everything doesn't have to happen on the year clock allows us to ship things faster. Too. We can get out bug fixes or improvements in intermediate releases because we're not sort of just wedded to this annual cadence for everything.
So hopefully it's better.
You think I've seen a lot more later is more user research. So there was a lot of user research at the wedding suggestion.
Absolutely.
I mean, I think part of it, to your point of maturation, is everything is harder now, right? Like, I think before, you know, it was like the algebra times of math, and now it's like calculus or like things beyond that even, and it's just harder. It takes more time. It takes more research. Things are more subtle, and so that's kind of what we're moving towards.
Harder for a couple of reasons. Like, one is the user base is so huge that you really don't want to mess it up. You're not playing around with, you know, a small test audience. And the other is the platform itself. Like, there's all of these dependencies that we're creating, interdependencies that we're creating all the time. And so if you change something, it's going to have a side effect somewhere else. So everything gets more hard. We should probably call it now because at some point somebody's going to walk into the conference room and that's going to interfere with everything.
Podcast listeners would get the true Google meeting experience of, like, you know, we need this room.
All right.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Awesome. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks.